everyone. Welcome to episode 2 of Behind the Cut, or I don't know. Do we want to still call it Behind the Cut, or do we want to call it something else? I don't know, guys.
I think it's a dope name, but yeah, I don't necessarily care. As far as I see it, I am a guest on your show still, Wheels. So this is yours. You run the thing.
Well, we were talking about this before we started, but like I said, like this is I want this to be a community thing.
Fair enough.
So like everyone's input, like I'll do all the back end work, you know, like post production and like upload and stuff, but I want us to be excited about like doing something each and every week.
Fair enough. Yeah, behind the cut for now suits. I mean, maybe it's kind of something where like a name will just develop over time.
Yeah, probably. So yep. we'll figure it out. But let's go ahead and start. So today, actually, we're fairly short because a lot of people are working, and a lot of people are traveling because of the World Cup. So I only have 2 people on today. I have Neb, who was on last week, and also Eric joining me back. And hopefully, people will come on a little bit later.
Yeah, I think hopefully Reggie and Chris will be home soon and they can hop in a little bit late.
Oh, it's all
crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed. No, it's all good. Well, I mean, so this is something. Even having 6 people on is chaotic and whatnot. Just because everyone wants to speak or something like that. Reggie spoke the most last time. Just saying.
What, 6 words total, maybe?
No, it's all good.
Reggie said maybe 75 words.
He started out strong, but it dwindled, man.
He tapered.
Must hate to see it.
Well, that's why. I mean, we did the around the room. Like that's all it was. We did the around the room and then yeah. But it's all good. All right, so let's go ahead and get started. And some news that I'm just gonna randomly find on Petapixel because that's where I get all of my news. But the first thing is first. Sony did announce a 400mm 2.8 lens.
Ooh, yes, welcome Sony to sports and wildlife shooting game.
Yep. Yeah, they really are. They're like going full force at it.
They're destroying it right now.
Yeah, they're not only killing it in video, but they are just wrecking photo at the moment.
I actually watched a bunch of the videos that got posted up by a lot of the kind of the big YouTubers that got fun at the event and stuff. And from what I saw from it, it is far, far better than the Canon and Sony comparison. But unlike a lot of Canon and Nikon comparison, but unlike a lot of Sony gear that kind of shoots way high in price wise, it seems like a pretty reasonable price. It's only about like $2,000 higher than the other offerings, and seems to be way better.
Yeah, I think Sony's just trying to get into the sports game too. Like, it's not just wildlife; it's also sports as well.
Oh, sports, yeah. I mean, sports makes up the biggest part of professional photography.
Oh yeah, I agree. I mean, if like whenever you think sports photography, you think like Canon and Nikon, like 100%. That's the only cameras you ever see on the side. But now you'll
big,
guaranteed start seeing some Sony's
big fat bodies.
Yeah, very true.
All right,
now Sony's coming in.
Sony has been killing it for a while. They know I feel like Nikon and Canon are like, I wouldn't say like, cause you, I wouldn't say a decade behind, but you know how like every 2 years technology changes. So like Canon and Nikon are like older, are like,
oh yeah.
Yeah. And Sony's that like new kid on the block trying to prove himself, but Sony is just blowing everyone out of the water with all this stuff.
They're really stuck in the past, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously there's still like, there's actually like legitimate mechanical functions going on in a lot of those bodies still with the, you know, their mirrored bodies and things that they're using. Obviously Sony's are, at least DSLRs are pretty much all mirrorless now. So everything is just software and technology is way easier
to fix than
it really
a physical
is.
Thing.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And that's like the biggest thing is like the Sony's, you can update them every like few months with
firmware updates.
With firmware upgrades. And it legitimately, because it was like the Ace, I think it was the A7 II or A7 R2 that like got a FPS video upgrade via firmware or something like that.
It was the R2.
Yeah, the R2. Because it went from, what was it, 1080 at 24 to 1080 at 60, right? It was like a massive upgrade. Yeah, like totally free, and I think that like that's enough for me to go like, yeah, I'm gonna something switch. Like, what if they just decide that they want the R3 to have, you know, 180 frames per second in a few months if they're able to mathematically make it happen?
All right, so let me know if I'm okay. One, the firmware thing, I need to look into that because I haven't updated the camera that I'm working on in forever. Two, don't give it. Let me know if I'm wrong about this, but doesn't Sony allow you to take like 100 photos like a second or something like that? Is
in 20, it's 20 FPS in stills, which is double the highest amount that a DSLR has ever been able to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so yeah, definitely be able to get into the sports game, and I could see a lot of people switch to Sony for sports. I don't know if they'll do it just yet because it is hard. Like, I have struggles with shooting with the A7S sometimes, which meaning like it's hard to change it. They make it harder to change the focusing point.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys
run. I can see that. Yeah, I can see that. It's definitely not as conventional as Canon's layout is for selecting that. But I will also say that once I adjusted it, to me, it's no different. Like, it was like when I was coming off a Canon onto a Sony, it took me a minute because it was like, wait, what do I do again? Or where's the button? But like now that everything's just, you know, it's just like taking, it's just like breathing at this point. It's like, oh, you know, hit this button, hit this button, hit this button. I'm ready to go. And I don't feel like it's slowing me down anymore.
Yeah, the biggest thing that was holding Sony back from moving into the sports game was their lack of fast, long glass. Because, you know, the kind of the staple of photography and sports is going to be on the sidelines. So you're shooting your flagship bodies, which is right now the D5 and the 1DX Mark II. And for Sony, it's the A9 and usually a 300 or 400 f/2.8. And they didn't have any long glass Sony had. Their longest, I believe, was their 100 to 400, like 4.5 to 5.6 or something like that. And it just wasn't fast enough for sports. So that's kind of, in my opinion, the only thing that held them back. Other than that, the A9 is a better performer than the D5 and the 1DX Mark II.
The A9, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I haven't used the A9 yet, but I hear that's really good for photos.
Yeah, it's dumb fast. You can do... I might be mistaken, but I think it's 20 frames per second at uncompressed RAW files, which is nuts. It's just insane.
Well, yeah, that's actually wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think... What? Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, I'm like, even just like comparing it to like the Sony or the A7 R3, its price point is like $1,000 more.
It's not even that expensive.
Yeah, it's not. It's a $4,000 body. And
whereas the 1DX comes in at what, 6.5?
Yeah, you're getting 204,000 ISO, 20 FPS for continuous shooting speed, and 24.2 megapixels. I mean, what you're getting out of a 1DX is you're getting a 42 megapixel sensor. So you're getting almost double, you know, the more pixels for, you know, taking photos. But
I mean, I've heard a lot of complaints from Sony users, especially because the flagship bodies are traditionally meant for extremely fast shooting, that those extra megapixels actually aren't needed, and they're just kind of kill space.
Yeah, after
I mean 46 megapixels is dumb.
Yeah, I mean, after like what, 30 megapixels, like, aren't you really just slowing your workflow down at that point?
Yeah, I mean, unless you're blowing up an image on a massive, you know, unless your image is going on Times Square.
Yeah, and you need some like crazy res.
You don't need that much. I think that's one of the like dumbest things with kind of the megapixel race between the big three right now. It's like, you know, Nikon with their 850 putting out these massive amounts.
Well, yeah, that's a selling point. It's a selling point that they can put on a box. Like, it's the same thing as, you know, like when they're selling internet speed, you'll go like one ISP versus the other. You'll see like similar numbers, but if you look at it, like the abbreviation's different, like megabits a second versus like megabytes a second and like all that wild stuff, man. It's just, you know, it's the reason why they put 99 cents on something versus a dollar. It just looks cheaper, even though it's, you're saving what, a penny. I mean, it's going to be $1.06 versus $1.07.
Well, I mean, okay, so back when I was in school in 2012, we shot with the Mamiya 645s, the medium format with the leaf shutter on it. It was an it was 80 megapixels. Every photo you would take would be half a gig.
Yeah.
And that was just insane. Yeah. So that
Dude, that's insane.
I don't know if it was 80 megs, but I know it was, I know the files were a half a gig.
Yeah, that's nuts. I mean, like, the biggest, like, and the reason why I think it's insane is, you know, for images where you do need a bunch of megapixels, you know, whether it be a, you know, a massive landscape or some, usually it's things that are still, Sony has their pixel shift. Do you guys know what that is?
Yeah,
so pretty much, for the people that don't know, the Sony bodies obviously have the in-body stabilization, unlike every other DSLR. And so you have to have your computer or your camera up on a tripod, and when you take a pixel shift photo, it takes a photo, shifts the sensor over by one pixel, and then shifts it again the other way by one pixel,
yeah,
and then
so combines
that to like 100, like an equivalent 100, yeah. Like 100, 100x or something like that.
It's basically combining three images. It's taking like three images and putting them all in one, and you're getting like an absurd, like you get, I don't even know what the calculation is, but it's something absurd.
Yeah. It's, you know, for stuff like that, you know, if you need a still file or a still moving object at a high file, it's good to use, but I find that amount of megapixels just a little overkill.
Well, speaking of megapixels, they just released the new SD card or the SD with the ultra capacity on it up to 128 terabytes.
I saw that.
No, he did not misspeak. Terabytes.
That's scary, man. You could have photos from 2 years ago on there still.
2 years? Like 10 years.
Well, all right. I will say this. Back when I was first started shooting in 2010, 8 years ago, I had a 4 gigabyte card with a Nikon D200, and I was able to take about, I think, 400, 500 photos with that, raw, of course. And so, like, even just starting out, like, with, like, the 1 gig cards, like everyone's like, oh, dude, that's a gigabyte. Like, that's a massive thing. We're getting to the point to where terabytes are generated to be, like, the standard. Like, it's generated to be where you need a terabyte, like,
I don't even scoff at 128 gig cards.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna be like, even in computer standards, like, remember you used to get like a terabyte hard drive and people were like, oh my gosh, that's so much space. Bro, I can barely function with 1 terabyte hard drive on a computer. I need like a lot more.
There's a reason why we all work on external hard drives. Like,
yes.
I have 20
3 external hard drives.
I have 24 terabytes from when I first started photography to now, 24 terabytes worth of data.
Yeah, stuff. Yeah.
I'm at like.
I mean, at this point, you just have like, do you just have hard drive after hard drive, or do you just have like a server dump that you just dump everything onto?
I'm still at the point to where I still do the external hard drives just because it's more portable and.
Oh yeah, 100%. It's easier to store. You can just pull out what you need.
Nah,
that kind of thing.
Nah, you guys clearly have not used a well set up NAS, my friend. That is the
yeah, know. Man. But you know, not all of us have money for that kind of stuff, right?
Oh, you
well,
act like
okay.
I bought it. That's all, daddy.
We'll think
about him.
We'll think about it. All right. So I mean, Neb works with MetaThreads, and then Eric, you work solo. Like, you guys work. Neb, are you working with anyone over at MetaThreads, or is it just you?
I mean, I primarily do stuff like day to day. When we do like big projects, we actually work with Uriel Oreo.
Oh, okay. Well, what I'm
so getting... you know, we'll do like events, and he does events with us, and then he helps with like a lot of the like creative direction of like new stuff that would be coming out and that kind of stuff. But like for day to day, like just, you know, social posting, like different, you know, videos and stuff like promoting our gear, that's all me.
Right. Well, what I'm getting at is, so like, I as of right now, I'm working at in a team environment, and so it's harder now because I'm the one with all the keys. Like, I'm the one with all the hard drives, so it's harder to give my hard drives up. Like, when someone's like, hey, I need that. So definitely having a raid system or whatever system set up.
That would be so ideal.
Yeah, and that's what I mean.
That's what I run off of. When I finish projects, I move them from my external hard drives onto the server. And if I do need to pull them back up, I just have my Premiere Pro or my Lightroom backed up to both those. So both files are the same name. So you just find them on there instead. It's so easy.
Well, with what is it, the stuff, I'm trying to think, all of my hard drives that I have, the 24 terabytes, are all actually mirrored to one other hard drive. So I have 48 terabytes just sitting somewhere. Half of them are back at my house because I used to work on Mac, so some of my old hard drives are formatted just to Mac. So I have to actually I had to download a program to try to get this stuff off of it. And it's fun, especially if you freelance and someone else, and because I work on a PC, so it's fun being able to try to get some stuff from a hard drive that's formatted on a Mac. But I think, and then I switch over to PC a little bit later. So there's just some things I just can't access now.
I think Lacy's new. They have like a RAID external hard drive, and one of the, if I'm not mistaken, one of the like ways you can set it up is to have it kind of dual download, one in Mac and one in PC format, which seems like a brilliant idea, especially when you work in teams.
Yeah,
like
but that effectively cuts your hard drive in half.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you 50% of your hard drive will be, you know, like it'll fill up twice as fast because you're basically putting double the amount of data on it.
Yeah, I mean, like 99% of the time I'm working solo, so like I don't have any need for that. But I mean, for somebody who does and you work like as a team on
I mean, ideally your whole team is either on Mac or Windows, but obviously that is
generally
not
set up a team.
I mean, that's probably not how most like esports orgs are running things at the moment or companies around it, just because it's so new. I mean, I'm sure there's a couple out there. I mean, what did you say? Liquid, like 1UP's probably
all
Alienware and stuff.
They're all on PCs, if I'm not mistaken.
So yeah, all right. So I actually have a question for you guys. For like on the road editing, MacBook or a really beast Windows laptop?
MacBook.
What about the issues that we just talked about? Like where you got to deal with, you know, file differences or to have a different hard drive is using at home.
It goes both ways. Like I'm Mac through and through.
Yeah, there you go.
PC. And that's less about like me not liking PC. Like I'm, you know, a PC gamer.
Yeah,
but it's one of those just like I am so used to the way that Mac works. There's no reason for me to swap now. I would shoot myself in the foot if I did that.
Yeah, so because I'm on an Alienware. You know, I've always been PC. Like the most Mac I've ever gone is literally I had an iPod. I had like two of the different iPods, and then like I went Android for forever, and then I got an iPhone like a year ago. And to be honest, I won't ever switch off iPhone. It's just I like it a lot better than Android. But I mean, I've still always been PC because I've always been like, you know, really a big PC gamer. So I've always edited on PC, which to be honest, like, for mobile editing is kind of leaves you limited unless you want to carry around like, you know, a brick with a full size video card in it. And you know, it's, I mean, trust me, this Alienware I use, it is so badass, but damn, it is heavy.
All right. So I'm primarily PC right now. If I had the opportunity, I would get a MacBook to use like all the time. But I would use it for both on the road travel and also at home editing, because to set up a station or something. But I think Macs work with I can't remember the format of it off the top of my head, but the way that Windows hard drives are, I think it's a little bit more stable.
It's TFS versus FAT32.
Yeah.
Or wait.
Well, FAT32 does both, but it's limited how much space it is, and it's also flimsy too.
That's what it is. It's high chance of corruption.
Right,
higher chance, not high.
Right. I used to be all Mac until I started working in esports, actually, because I was like, you know what? I just want to be a PC gamer now. I'll just go and do PC. PCs have better specs for video. But I'm actually finding myself limited of what I can do on a PC compared to a Mac, because PCs, you still can't.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Because PC, you can't render out the ProRes.
Yeah, it's the big thing about Macs that I think a lot of people that don't touch Macs or don't know about them is the actual, like, OS X versus Windows. OS X is very well optimized. When it comes to, like, quote-unquote pro things that Mac do, it's funny. Their hardware sucks. Like their, like, MacBook Pro isn't really pro. But the actual OS X is extremely well built to work with applications like Adobe and Final Cut and all those quote-unquote pro applications.
Yeah. And that's for one specific reason, and that's because Mac controls everything within their computer. So, like, the biggest difference between PC is that, like, your PC and my PC both run Windows, but I don't know what parts you have in yours, and you don't know what parts I have in mine. And the problem is that Windows and Microsoft has to create an OS that works for, like, an array of manufacturers, a wide variety of, you know, people that produce chipsets, that produce hard drives, that produce USB devices, that produce peripherals.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have to hit the broad spectrum, whereas Mac literally works with, you know, probably a couple of different manufacturers to obviously meet their scale. But, like,
I could literally name the
ultimately,
like,
yeah, like, yeah. They use one production house and one, you know, one facility is, you know, it's the same technology in every single Mac that you have. Like, you know, one version of the MacBook Pro has the exact same parts that the equivalent one does bought in the same line. And it's just, so yeah, I mean, obviously the OS is able to be optimized at that. So yeah, I mean, I definitely see there. I also think the biggest problem with Windows and mobile is that, like, you literally have to buy an unreasonably expensive computer, basically equivalent to a MacBook Pro, to, you know, to get what you actually need to edit on a laptop.
True.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, ultimately, if you're going to edit well, video, especially on the road, you have to spend the money, whether you have MacBook or Windows. I guess it's just personal preference.
Yeah, when it comes to, like a PC.
Ultimately, you're going to be spending a bunch of cash, so.
Well, I think for the most part, because a lot of people don't realize this, but even if you're working with older stuff, like either a PC, Mac, or anything like that, and your video is becoming either choppy to watch or the playback and stuff, you could actually create proxies within Premiere now. And so I used to do that back when I used to have a really bad PC, or if my Mac couldn't handle the 4K footage, because at the time 4K just came out. And so
and what computer could handle it?
Exactly. So, like, but luckily I didn't have anything delivered in 4K. It was all 1080, but I would still have to proxy everything just because I had that workflow where everything was a lot more smoother.
Oh yeah, no. And I mean, the last thing you want to do when you're editing a video and trying to make it like a precise cut at this one specific point in the song so that, you know, it hits right. Like, the last thing you want is your timeline chunking its way along, you know, 15 seconds past where you're trying to stop.
Oh, yeah.
Or the glorious Adobe Premiere is in parentheses not responding. Oh, like, I didn't realize it wasn't responding. Thanks for letting me know again, Windows.
Also, Eric, I do have a question with you and Neb for the same thing. I have had this recently. I'm working on an i9 with the 1080 on it, and Premiere loves to crash on me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you're working
That's you're working on an i9, which is still a really, like, it's still a super new chipset. And so, like, I built a rig a couple years ago. It's actually the one that Reggie uses. And it was a 6700K, the Intel Skylake. And that processor had a very specific bug that under extreme workload environments, like, you could run a test. I don't even remember what it was called.
The stress test?
Not even a stress test. It was more extensive than that. It was like a hammer test or something like that. And it simulated your computer under extreme stress. And I was streaming a lot at the time when I bought it. I hadn't really done a lot of video editing at that point. But point is that there was an issue with the chipset and my specific motherboard and the Windows drivers, and it wasn't stable. Like, the system under extreme workload, so if I was streaming and playing like a, you know, a really graphically intensive game, my computer would just lock up. And you know, Windows finally kind of patched its way through that, and Intel, you know, kind of patched its way through it too. But point is that when I bought the Skylake processor, it had just released, and it was a brand new chipset that had just come out, a whole new architecture, and it's kind of common that when new architectures come out, you have issues like that. And so that's not surprising to me, actually at all, with Windows and my recent issues with Intel. Yeah, the problem is that Windows,
it's really...
you can't get a better manufacturer than Intel right now, because they successfully hamstrung AMD like 10 years ago.
And one of the other big issues that I find is a lot of people, like for example, your i9 is great and it's good for certain applications like 3D modeling and design, but you had it on Premiere, right?
Yeah, that's what you're saying.
So I mean, you can only take advantage of so many lanes and so many cores. So, you know, for example, one of the biggest things, the kind of funny ones, at IEM Oakland, they had just upgraded their computers for the PUBG tournament. And instead of getting i5s or i7s, they got i9s.
Yep.
Now, if you know anything about video games, they are generally run on a single core. And i9 has, like, I think 16 cores.
Yeah.
So there's much less caching for a single core. And programs go the same way. So if you have a program that can't take advantage of all of those cores, they're just dormant. You've just lost, like, you know, X amount.
The problem is...
And so, like...
It's not designed to only utilize one core. So when you ask it to, it freaks out.
That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. So until Intel and Windows patch through that, and they successfully create, basically get the architecture to utilize it, effectively, think of like processing is all like timing mechanism within your computer, right? And so if like the timing is off on within the architecture of the processor and how it interacts with your software, like you're going to run into bugs. And so until they patch through like those kinks in the software with this new architecture, you're going to run into crashes and you're going to run into like instability, essentially.
Gotcha. So that what that means is save your work every 30 minutes.
Save all, like literally autosave should be.
I do it every 5 minutes.
Yeah, if you don't have autosave turned on, you're dumb. Like for 30 minutes, like every 30 minutes, you should have autosave on. And then if you're like making a significant change to what you're like editing and you're not just like hitting Control S and saving it, then oh my gosh, you are making me anxious. You're going to make me anxious.
I mean, most of my projects are really small, so I'm making a lot of drastic changes over a short period of time, so my autosave's on 5 minutes. Like, for example, the doc that, or the short little, like, 2.5 minute video that I put out today with Epsilon, that was edited within a, like, 6 hours total, like three the same night and then three this morning, and I made huge changes in those times. Like every 5 minutes I make a huge change, so having that saved is really important, because I almost had it crash on me when I was exporting, and that was really scary.
Yeah, I usually save, I save periodically throughout. I think my autosave's like 10 minutes or something like that, but so I'll save periodically, so if I get through a section, I'll save it, and then
same.
And then I usually save before I render, and then I save before I export.
Always.
But yeah, so that's just so that's what I was getting at, is that's what I was hinting at is if Macs are better because it is more optimized than PC, and I don't know how much if Macs can, like, that would be the reason to go to Mac, is because it is more optimized, even though the specs aren't best, or it doesn't seem like they're the best, but it's, since it is optimized, it would run the programs a whole lot more smoother.
Well, not necessarily smoother, but what you're going to get out of a Mac always is longevity. Your Mac is going to last longer than your Windows laptop will, no matter what, because it's more optimized. And since it's more optimized, it produces less heat. And the thing about a laptop is it's basically an oven. no computer part was meant to be put in a tiny, thin little case. They all produce a lot of heat because there's tons of electricity running through your laptop, all the circuits and everything like that. So all of it generates heat, every single component in there does. And so the problem is when you're doing things like video editing or even like a lot of photo editing with Lightroom or even some heavy Photoshopping, like you're going to be generating, you know, enough like equivalent to gaming on a laptop. Like there's reasons why they sell like cooling pads with fans in them for laptops. And it's because laptops overheat. No matter whether you're running Mac or Windows, the only thing about Windows is that it's going to do it more quickly, and it's going the lifespan of that laptop is. I've always been, you know, of the opinion if you get a laptop to actually run well for 2 years, you're a fucking genius, and you're doing something better than me because I have no idea how you're doing it. Because
I sit here with my 2014 MacBook Pro that is finally going to kick the dust.
Exactly my point. But here's the problem with your MacBook Pro: when it does kick the dust, it is done. So the problem is, and there's one drawback to that is that like you're just chugging on fine, and then bam, everything is gone, and you're like, my world just got rocked. Whereas Windows, it's going to degrade a lot sooner, but it's going to tell you it's about to shit the bed. So you have time to prepare for it.
Yeah, every got time to move it to the toilet.
Like very rarely, and all the time that I've been using PC, I think I've maybe encountered one system that literally just I woke up one morning, wouldn't turn on, the whole thing was dead, and I have no idea why.
That's my favorite.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I mean that can happen with any electronic, but ultimately, like, yeah, Windows will tell you ahead of time. But you're not going to get nearly as much time out of it. You're just not. So, yeah, I mean, I think ultimately for mobile, if you're going to just spend the money on what you really need, you know, to actually edit video without your computer freezing and it chunking along, you might as well just buy a MacBook, to be honest, unless you obviously can get a super dope Windows PC for a good price. But
it's a hard one.
It's just hard to do. Desktop, I'd argue, but that's probably... Yeah.
So in my opinion, if you were to buy a whole new system tomorrow, in my opinion, the best thing for some like a traveling photographer, videographer, if you're on the road a lot, like I know all of us are, or have been in the past, my honest opinion, I think your best setup is an eGPU. So an eGPU is an external graphics card, which is pretty much, it says enough, which is what I'm going to be doing when I upgrade my computer. Probably in 10 days when I get home, I'll probably go to the Apple store immediately and go buy a new Mac. But it's one of those. So what you do is you plug in your GPU via Thunderbolt, and it allows you to get like, I think on the highest end, about 85% of your card's power. So instead of having to edit on two systems, which is really hard to do, like having to transfer those files and stuff is a pain in the ass. You can,
well, and it cuts
when you're at
time.
Home.
It just saves time when you're editing. Yeah. Like it saves time and workflow.
Yeah. Like when you're at home and need to grind through an edit, you have the power of a GPU to be able to render and export and all that stuff. But when you're on the road, you still have a small, sleek, you know, MacBook.
Yeah, I mean, truth be told, that's ideally probably kind of the way of the future. I mean, Windows has those options now at this point too. I think Razer's got a good one out. I think Alienware's done one. You know, I think
actually,
ultimately,
Windows has it longer.
That probably is the best of both worlds if you're like, you know, strictly photo editing, that kind of thing. I think I will always have a desktop Windows PC because I love games too much. But at the same time,
well, I mean, you can play games on your GPU too. That's a nice thing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So when I my system when I run, I'll get a 1 or 2 terabyte SSD in my MacBook, and then you format the other. My opinion: the best thing about Macs is you can run both Windows and OS X. So I'll have it split in half, where half of it is OS X, pretty much just for my work, and then all my gaming is on the other half of my hard drive.
It just hurts me that you still have to do that.
Yeah.
Why can't they all just get along and work together?
Yeah, that's just Apple's. That's literally what like Apple's based off of is they're their own thing and no one else.
Oh,
can
yeah,
do it.
It's their exclusive. It's like, I mean, it's for the reasons we just discussed. Like they're more efficient because of that. But you know,
I mean, it's just basically just Canon, Nikon, Sony. Everything.
Yep.
We're pretty much. It's almost to the point where we're always like nitpicking. Like, okay, like this is better because of this. This is better because of that. And
ultimately, it's an endless debate, and it always will be because Microsoft and Apple are massive fucking companies, and neither one of them is going to let the other get the edge on the other. Like, it.
Nope.
Ultimately, there's going to be good options on both sides. I think it really is still personal preference.
And the, yeah, it's all like which thing you care more about, you know? In my opinion, I care more about the operating system, which is why I go OS X. If I care more about the hardware, hell yeah, I'd go PC. There's no question that they're better at it. But, you know, it's just what do you care about more, and are you willing to spend the money on that? And that's all it comes down to.
Yeah, I just can't give up my games.
I don't think any of us can.
See, I'll sacrifice the gaming on a laptop because, you know, I could probably get a MacBook because I have a Switch and I can game on the road. But I don't even really like gaming on laptops to begin with because I'm sitting here and with a desktop and three massive screens and tons of space, and that's my comfort zone for gaming. So I'll probably always have one of those, but I think ultimately I'll probably switch to MacBook for mobile in the future for a personal machine.
True.
I like them.
Well, just to let you guys know, when I was in school, that's all they had was Macs. Like, they had the Mac Pros, they had the Mac, the iMacs, they had everything Mac. So that's kind
of
what...
A lot of colleges got deals on those.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that kind of segues into the main topic that I wanted to get into. And I know it's just the two of us, or the three of us. So the thing is, like... The main topic that I want to discuss today is school worth it?
Yep. It's a hard one. Another debate for the ages, boys.
Yeah, this is definitely a good one.
All right, so I'll just go and give you my thoughts, and then you guys can tell me based on what I say or like your own thoughts on what school is. Personally, I did go to school. I went to school 6 years ago as of last Saturday. It was when I graduated from Hallmark Institute of Photography and Turner's Falls, Massachusetts. Unfortunately, the photography school is no longer around. It was a trade school, so I just learned photography with a little bit of video. I was more into the video than I was with the photography, but I still came out of it really well. But after school is actually, I felt like after school is when my actual learning began, or like that's where it like jump started a little bit, because I actually learned a lot more after school and because I continued to learn than actually in school, because in school I was just, it was 40 hours a week. We were just thrown everything and anything, and you had, we had to basically like, it basically would be a job. And so you would be thrown, like, it wouldn't just be like, you're not focusing on portraits. You're focusing on not only portraits, but still lifes, outdoor shoots. You're focusing on like location stuff. You're focusing on like all these different aspects of what photography is. It's just to try to figure out what you would want to do. And for me, I mean, that helped me out if I wanted to be a still life photographer. If someone wants me to do a still life, I can do that. If someone wants me to do a portrait, I can do that. I understand lighting. I can never look at a movie ever again just because of the intense amount of lighting that I had to do. Personally, I would not take it back for the world. I absolutely loved it. I had great connections in it. I still talk to a bunch of people today. A bunch of them are still my good friends, and they're actually still shooting today. About 40% of the school probably isn't shooting or in the photography or creative world because they either switched courses or because of either the debt, or I don't want to say just debt, but just because there's something that happened where they had to not be in school anymore. And so I think college in a way is good, but it's also where it is that double-edged sword where it could hurt you in the long run because of the amount of debt and because of the amount of basically what you're learning.
Yeah. And time invested too. I mean, like, flat out, let's be real here. School takes a long time. And it takes, you know, multiple years to even complete. And that's a lot of time that someone could be working in a field and learning about what that is. So I guess that kind of.
Well, the school I went to was only 10 months. It was only from September to.
It was like a trade accelerated kind of program.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay.
And it was just photography and video, so it was all creative and such.
Okay. So, yeah, you went to it. You definitely had a different experience.
I think you did it the right way. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for me, so, I went to school. I'm a college graduate. I have a degree in marketing, not even in film or photography. So, but, you know, I did the traditional four-year college route. I would say that there were definitely advantages, but at the same time, I think there's drawbacks. And I think college is, I don't know, I guess mixed feelings on it. It's like, I think it's dependent on the person a lot of times. There's a lot to be said for getting into a field and working. Because, you know, while I got a marketing degree in school, I didn't learn about marketing until I started working in marketing or started talking to companies about how to market or what would satisfy them to market, right? Like, I didn't get out of college with this degree and then just get a job and like know how I should market this company. College didn't teach me that. What college taught me to do is it taught me to manage projects. And that, I think, is a very valuable skill that not a lot of people possess, A, mm-hmm. but B, like, I think that is one of the most redeeming qualities of school. And it's part of the reason why a lot of people should still consider it. Now, that being said, I'm not going to blanket statement everyone here either. I think that if school's not right for you, or you have an opportunity, or, we know several different scenarios. I mean, close friends of mine, people that work in this industry that did go to school and didn't. But all of them right now are successful. So, I think it depends on the person. But at the same time, I think ultimately my experience now, I'd say it was positive. I think if you asked me 3-4 years ago when I graduated, I would have said it was a complete waste of my time and money. But that was probably because I wasted too much of my own time and money in college. I didn't make it in 4 years. It took me longer.
Yeah, So that's just like me when I was in school. I didn't as much as I should. I didn't use the school enough. Like I was only there 10 months, and it just flew by. And I was like, man, even though I was there like nightly, and daily, it's just like I could have spent my time a little bit better. So
yeah. And I definitely could have. So, I think some of my animosity towards school is maybe due to my own performance. Hey, I graduated, I got the degree. Ultimately when it gets down to it, like some of my closest friends didn't graduate college or even go, but they're successful and they understand how to manage their time and manage their projects. I think the biggest key for anyone working in our industry, especially, is are you passionate about this? Because if you're just doing this as a job, or you're just doing this because like it's cool, or you think it's cool, or whatever, like I don't think you're gonna have an easy time managing projects or doing this. I think like if you weren't to go to school and you didn't have this extra training in project management and time management, and like showing people that you can meet a deadline. I think people would struggle because I think that this is an industry that it moves, like you said earlier, Eric, it moves very fast. Sometimes you have to turn around and edit overnight and you just have to. And so you have to be able to do that. I mean, the amount of nights that I had to cram for a paper, or like write a paper in one night because I just didn't have enough time to get it done or whatever it was in college, like that like brings you back. You know how to do it at that point. So, I mean, for me, it prepared me for some of the craziness of this industry. But at the same time, like, you know, I don't need my degree to do what I'm doing, you know, in photography or film right now. So it was beneficial, but I wouldn't necessarily say it's a have to scenario.
The one thing that you said in there about cramming papers, the one thing the school didn't teach me. They taught us business, they taught us a bunch of other things, but the one real life thing that happens, I'm sure to you, both of you guys, is what Eric was talking about, a fast turnaround kind of thing. And that was the thing, is they would give us a project and they'd give us a couple of weeks to work on it. And you would, you would have be able to reshoot it. You'd be able to like do it at a different angle. You'd be able to be on the computer. I was on it. I was editing one photo for an entire week. You can't do that nowadays. And...
No, you can't. I mean, for me, my experience, you know, it was, I had 18 credit hours a semester or 15 credit hours or whatever the hell I was taking at the time. And, you know, my marketing teacher didn't give a shit what my, you know, ethics teacher was doing. Like, they didn't talk, so they just assigned papers. And sometimes I just had to write a paper at 2 a.m. and turn in it at 8. Like, it just had to happen sometimes. And that has to happen in this industry. I can't tell you the amount of events that I've been to where it's like, we just got done working a 14-hour day. I'm hitting the bar, grabbing a drink and my laptop, and I'm going to edit for the night. And, you know, like, I can't tell you the amount of times that me and my friends have had to go do that. And it just, you know, it's like late night cramming again for papers and studying. But yeah, I mean, so for me, like that aspect, you know, is very familiar. I mean, I think that helps. But yeah, I think just managing projects, that's most of what I got out of school. I think that's really beneficial for a lot of people.
All right, now Eric, what is where are you at? I don't know if you've gone to school or not, or.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm a little younger than you guys, so I'm just kind of fresh 20. So I'm still in school right now. I attend community college in California. If you don't know what it is, look it up. I don't want to explain it. Anyway, I am a business and communications major, and I work kind of quote unquote on the side. But to Dame or to Ben's point, it's one of those situations where it's like, if I didn't love the job that I'm doing and I'm not really passionate about it, it's like I wouldn't be able to do it. I work like 2 full-time jobs, kind of. I go to school full-time, and then once school's out, I work full-time. I think in this day and age, like if you are a fresh grad high school or like 1 year into out of high school or something like that, I personally don't see the value in going to school for the arts or for photography or for videography.
Agreed.
I think you're much better off going to a community college or going to a 4-year for something that will be able to tie you into the job that you're doing. So I'm taking business and communications courses because I know that is a part of my job. I am running a business. I'm a freelance photographer. I have the amount of stuff that I've learned in just like the 5 or 6 business classes that I've taken that I've directly applied to my everyday life as a owner of a company is, I think, way more valuable than what I would learn in film classes. I have taken a single film course. I took Intro to Photography, and excuse me as I get salty, because my school would not let me skip that, even though my portfolio was, in my opinion, far better than the professor that taught Intro to Photography. And I proceeded to spend 4 months learning what ISO, shutter speed, and basic camera mechanics were. And I know how those work already. So that was the most boring class I have ever been in my whole damn life. And I even got to stand in on the highest course at my community college, which is advanced portraiture lighting, I believe. That was the title, and it was still stuff that I already knew. So it's one of those things where I think actually spending time working, you're going to learn a lot more, you know, you learn from failure. And I find a classroom kind of, it's harder to fail in a classroom, frankly, you know, toss me out in the workplace and, you know, send me to this location and you have to do this job or you don't get paid. I'm probably going to fail at a few things, but I'm sure as hell going to figure those out before the job's done because I need to get it done, you know? So I, in my opinion, I think you're better off if you do want to go to school, go for something that's going to be able to help you in your business life or in photography or videography or whatever it may be. And if you want to take courses as kind of like a, you know, a sub, major, then do that. But I think going just for film or photography, I don't think it makes sense at this point because there's so much knowledge available on the internet for free.
Well, you also can look at it this way, because I'm right next to RIT, and actually the professor that taught me, or he's a professor now, but the teacher who taught me, his name's David Turner, amazing fashion photographer, amazing with location lighting. And I'm glad I loved going to his classes because they would take us to the coolest places. They took us to an abandoned bank. They took us to a brewery. They took us a bunch of different places and showed us how to do location lighting. So what I'm trying to get at is do the research on what the teachers are. Ask people who are in the classes, like, hey, who is the teacher? Because sometimes it is that like person who just wants to make a paycheck. Like, oh, okay, I could easily teach gender speed, ISO, and all that, and f-stops, and like I could teach them. I can do that. So definitely being able to look at and just determining based on like if, because like a lot of the older photographers, I've tended to realize the people that were shooting film back in the day, if they try to transition to digital, some of them were not liking, and this is just talking like photography classes or video, video too, because they did shoot on film. I forget, digital cameras haven't been around that long. But the thing I was getting at is like a lot of them, it was hard for them. Because they were so used to shooting film and doing that, it was harder for them to switch to digital. And so a lot of their digital stuff isn't really up to par of what today's standards are. So I guess what I'm trying to get at is like it's sometimes like they could be like these famous people back in like the 60s and 70s. Or like they were like really well known or something, and then like when they came over to digital, it just didn't transfer. I've seen that a couple of times because we're the older people.
Yep. I've heard of that happening. I heard that happen to some people that
it's hard to transition your learning for sure, and especially your teaching.
Yeah, I agree. I think kind of touching back on a little bit of what Eric said too, like. And even this actually relates into kind of what you did, Wheels, is like Eric had to take his photography 101 class in college. Why? That's ridiculous. And so
I will be like, brutally honest.
College is a waste.
The photography 101 courses are ridiculous.
College is not, it's not like adapted for 2018, right? So like, there are a hell of a lot more jobs than college even has courses for.
Yep.
So, like, mm-hmm. you know, how can that be the ultimate route is my point. So, like, you know, I think things like trade schools or trade courses even, like the ability to take selective courses very tailored to certain things and be, you know, degreed in them in some way is a much more effective approach than going to a four-year college.
Oh, and a quick note.
As much as I do think that going to college can be very beneficial, and my experience ultimately was positive, I still think that I could have had a better experience for professional training. And that's, I think, you know, universities are in the near future going to be forced to start looking at that. I think less and less people are going to go to four-year colleges, and I think they'll eventually just get adapted into it. I mean, ideally, I hope they do, because it is absurd that you are wasting 6 months of your semester or four and a half months of your semester and your first semester of college on a course that you are vastly overskilled for. I mean, I started out in engineering and, you know, took, you know, I didn't take AP calculus in high school or any of the AP courses. I was in honors all through high school, but I was a swimmer. And so I was in school and I had a full-time job and it was swimming and I was competing at a really high level. So I didn't take any of that stuff. So I had to like retake calculus and stuff in college or just, you know, different courses like that, that might not have transferred over. Like that is so ridiculous. Why am I being taught the same thing I was just taught last year? And yeah, it's all just for a credit to say that you can do it. But I just proved that I could do it last year. And it just, that kind of stuff is such a waste of time and money that I understand why people don't go. I understand why more and more people aren't. And I understand why my friends, you know, some of my friends in this industry didn't. And they just started working and look at where they are. They're getting paid what I'm getting paid. Like we're all, you know, like they're not getting paid less because they don't have a degree. That's the point. is that there are options, there are ways to do it. But I also think that to just go and send it right after high school is risky, and that, you know, it takes a special type of person to make it happen.
Right. And it just depends on the person. It depends on how they learn.
Yep.
Some people are book smart, which if you haven't, I'll throw it back to episode, I think, 14 with Betty. She is really book smart, and she loves learning books and all that other stuff. I don't want to talk about her like while she's not here. But
Hi, Betty.
Hopefully you're listening to up to this point. But then there's other people like me. I hate reading. I'll dive into like the internet and like look up stuff like all the time. But when it comes to like actually like sitting down with like an actual like learn like school and stuff, I hated school. I hated doing tests.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not good at tests. I'm better with the hands-on stuff.
Dude. All right. We're going to delve deep into my past real fast, all right? When I was in fourth grade, and I'm going on record with this now because this is getting recorded. It's getting posted publicly. So, Ms. Lawler, if you're listening, I want you to know that you were wrong. And, I don't appreciate that very much. But anyway, my fourth grade teacher, Ms. Lawler, thought that I might have, like, potentially had a learning disorder, potential disability in fourth grade just because I was not exhibiting a lot of interest in any of the course material. So, you know, my mom went and, you know, we got, like, tested and, you know, did – I don't even really remember what it was. I just went and talked to this dude, and then the test was over. And we came back, like, a week later with the test results, and – the dude like sat, and I remember he said to my mom, he was like, Ben doesn't have anything wrong with him at all. In fact, Ben knows a lot of stuff. And like, that's how I felt about school the whole time. I thought school was kind of boring. I didn't really like the coursework. I thought it was particularly monotonous and repetitive because, I mean, how many times was I going to learn about the Civil War, guys? Like, for real. All grade school and all high school. Like, how many times could I get taught about the Revolutionary and Civil War? I like, come on. I know it in my sleep. It's ridiculous. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just, it was all boring. But, I mean, like, I love looking stuff up. I love figuring out new techniques and, you know, how to edit new techniques in videos or new transitions or different effects on photos. Like, I'm a sponge for that kind of stuff. And so I guess for me, it's... what I'm interested in. I will literally learn a million different things about what I'm super interested in, what I'm super passionate about. And I guess school was just kind of boring, man.
All right. Well, that kind of leads me into this next question. If you had the chance to go back and not do school, would you do it?
Oh man, that's a tough call.
I know it's a loaded question, but
out of high school, I wanted to be an engineer. I didn't swim in college so that I could go to engineering school. And so I went to engineering school, decided I didn't want to do that. And then, you know, finally figured out, honestly, just kind of ended up in marketing. Cause I felt like college was a game when I was in it. Like it was just get in and get out at this point. Like I felt like you just need to get in and get your degree so you can get out and then just move on. Because I realized like I didn't need the degree to get a job in what I wanted to do. I just needed to get an interview. If I could get the interview, like you talk to me, you know, I have a good interview. So yeah, I mean, for me, it was just, I don't know. I don't know if I'd go back, man. If I could redo it all over again at this point if I knew what I knew now about college at 18, I probably wouldn't go. But, shit. If it was the exact same scenario over again, who's to say?
All right, now, Eric, same question. I know it's loaded. Well, I mean, even though you are a little bit younger. I didn't know. So that should have been my first question before throwing a loaded question.
Right, that's I'm 10 years out of initially deciding to go to college, right? Like, it's been 10 years.
Well,
2 years in college.
Well, the question I was asking is, I guess the question I should have asked is, when exactly did you find out that you wanted to, like, do creative fully?
it definitely, like, fully, I learned in, like, my first semester of college, like, a few months after high school. But it's, it's, that's such a hard one. I don't think my skills were enough at that time for it to be worth me dropping out. But I feel like I could do a lot more if I had dropped out, because I would have, you know, I would have been able to spend all my time theoretically working on that. So it's a hard one, man. I'm possibly taking a gap year next year, depending on work situation come next semester. So, you know, I think we'll kind of see then if it was worth it or not. But, you know, I enjoy my school, and I think I'm in a good program right now for my work. So, yeah.
Okay, well, then this will lead to the next kind of sort of conversation that I want to have. Now that we've talked about, like, kind of us and our history in school, now let's talk a little bit of advice. Someone coming out of high school who wants to get into the film and the creative side of things. Basically, that's what they wanted to do when they either started high school or towards the end of high school. What are some advice that we can give some people? And I guess I can go ahead and start. So just to give you guys some time. So personally, my advice is I wouldn't go to school, because if you already know you want to do filmmaking, and I'm sure you've already have done some photos and video in high school or outside of high school, because I know a lot of people that do, then my suggestion would be school is very expensive. It costs a lot of money to go. I think almost sometimes around $20,000 a semester. I think that's the average. I have no idea. I'm just...
It depends on whether you're going to, like, college.
If it's a 4-year, it's like $20,000 a year for higher-end ones.
So what you could do is, I don't know the best way to do this, because I know there's not specific loans for this, or if your parents have saved up money, like mine did, for me to go to school, you could ask them, hey, is there a chance that I could actually get $5,000 to $10,000 instead of going to school? What I'm going to do is I'm going to get some really nice gear, and I'm gonna learn as much as I can, even though it is a lot of money. But instead of, so like you could waste 4 years of school and spend that $100,000+, you're only losing around 5 to 10. I think
saving money,
right? And so that's some advice that I've heard here and there. And if I had the opportunity to do that. Don't get me wrong, I can spend $5,000 to $10,000 tomorrow if I wanted to on gear.
So fast. Oh, dude, give me an hour. Give me an hour and I'll double that list.
Need an hour. Let me just click twice on my Amazon account.
Give me 10 minutes, actually. I was just talking about how to spend that much money, like, earlier today.
Yep.
That's super so easy, man. Yeah, I can literally name off a kit right now that I need that's north of 10 grand.
Yeah, I mean, I think... Well, I mean, by no means am I a financial advisor, but I will say that school is very expensive. I mean, I think it depends on the person, too. I think, once again, I think Wheels' suggestion is very valid, could be a potentially good opportunity for people. I also think it's risky. But I think it's based on the person. If you're the kind of person that is completely self-motivated and you can go and just learn on your own and you don't need structure, you don't need, you know, any of that, then yeah, go for it. I think that's a great idea, actually. But I don't think there's a lot of 18-year-olds that are like that. And maybe that's me being a pessimist, but I mean, there's a lot of 18-year-olds that haven't experienced a lot of things. And that is kind of, you know, going to a school can kind of provide a bit of a buffer zone for you to figure it all out. So yeah, I mean, if you're financially in a situation where you can afford it, I think pursuing either a 4-year college or potentially a trade school option, even more so, would be a good option. But that being said, if you're not in a financially stable scenario, or you aren't in a financial position to go and just drop money towards school, like, you know, student debt's a real thing, and it doesn't just go away. So, like, you know, you got to think about that. Like, you got to weigh all your options. You know, can you get a scholarship for something and learn photography on the side? Can you get a scholarship in the creative arts for something? How long have you been doing this to begin with? Are, you know, are you someone who just graduated college and you're interested in the arts and you want to go to art school, or have you been working hardcore on the arts for the past 4 years? I mean, I think it's all really dependent on the scenario, but I think school's beneficial if you can afford it. I think it's worth it, but don't break yourself over it, and don't set yourself back for the next 15 years because you think you have to go to school, because you don't have to go to school to do this. You can do this without a degree, and there are plenty of people who are doing it currently. So, that's kind of my take on it. I think ultimately I'll vote on the school side.
Now, Eric, you don't have to side with either of us. So there's no point system. So,
yeah, I mean, if you're very sure that it's what you want to do and you have honestly worked in the industry for a bit or in like the creative fields for a while, and you know that's what you want to do, I think, you know, take a year, take a quote unquote gap year, give it a go. If it doesn't work out, then you're still perfectly fine to go back to school. But
yeah, keep in mind, you can start school whenever you want to.
Yeah, you don't have to, just because you don't go to a 3-year college right out of high school doesn't mean that you can't go back. I think that's like a horrible stigma in the U.S.
Oh, no, it 100% is. It's what you do. It's just that's like what you did in the U.S. forever. You went to school, then you went to high school, and then you graduated high school and you got into college. And then you got into college and, you know, you got out of college and you got your degree and then you worked the rest of your life. Like, you don't have to do it that way. You can start school at a later date. So, you know, if it's better for you, you think that you have the opportunity to go and work or learn and, you know, take a chance at it, go for it. I don't think it's a bad idea. Starting school at 19 or 20 is not bad at all. Hell, starting it at 25 or even 30 is not bad.
Yeah, so I think if you know this is what you want to do and you've worked at it, go for it. If you don't know if it's what you want to do and you haven't done too much time in it, there's nothing wrong with going to school and learning on the side. That's what I'm doing. I'm going to school and working on the side.
I mean, if anything, school gives you an opportunity to grow up. It gives you an opportunity to mature. It gives you an opportunity to learn. And it's a really good buffer. It just really is. And you know, I'm speaking from my personal experience that, you know, at 18, I'm going to be honest, had I chosen the route of skipping school and gone for it, I don't know if I would have gotten it done, because I don't think I was ready to manage myself as an adult at that point. And I grew up a lot in college, but I figured it out during that time. And I think I matured a lot over those years. So, yeah, I mean, on my personal experience, I don't think I would have done it well without school, but it's probably also why I'm kind of voting for if you can do it, do it.
Right. And I think there's another thing too. There's one more thing that I wanted to get at besides the whole investing the $5,000 to $10,000. The other thing you can do, I don't know if this is more common now. It was back in when they were shooting film and stuff, because back in the days where you had to shoot film and stuff, you actually had to go to school to actually learn that. Now, since it's all digital, it's a lot different. But,
bro, there is more on you can learn on single YouTube. People's YouTube channels than a whole school can teach you. Honest to goodness.
And, I mean, you can learn more off one person's YouTube channel, and we should probably link some dope ones in the comments or something, or the info below after this. I'll get you some good ones, Will. But, like, you can learn more off of YouTube than you can in an entire semester of film school.
Yeah, let me list a couple of those YouTubes to see if you're with me. Philip Bloom, definitely for filmmaking.
Yes.
Definitely. I'm gonna go ahead and throw Peter McKinnon out there.
I agree. Absolutely. A, he's a badass. B, he does have a lot of really helpful tutorials. Yeah,
easy to watch.
It's a little. It's like, you don't feel like you're in school, but you learn stuff.
It's little skills that are really good to know. I've learned a lot of the stuff that I'm using this week for my work from Peter.
An up and coming one, Chris Hau, I think is what it is, Hau. I don't know if you guys know.
I think I know of him. I think I've seen something from him.
There's a couple of videos in there that's
Reggie showed me something from him. Yeah,
right. There is a couple other ones with let me see if this dude's correct. But I know for on the editing post production side, there is someone by the name of Misner Media. He is he does a lot with color correction. He's also really good to learn from. He's a little bit smaller. And then I think Matthew Pierce is another one too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, Matthew video Pierce side really of things, good. To kind of toot someone's horn in our industry, Ian, from Team Liquidu, is he the head of 1UP?
No, he's the post-production.
Head of post?
Yeah.
Head of
post-production lead.
Post-production lead? Yeah.
Yeah. What's his last name, Sands? Are you, what is it? Not,
I don't know. It's Ian Sands. It's not Ian Sands.
Not Ian Sands, yeah. So he went quite viral like a few years ago when kind of the schooling on YouTube came out, and he's still pretty solid viewership on his videos. I've learned a ton from him. Definitely a good one to check out.
An After Effects person to check out. EC Abrams is really good.
Dude, that's where I need to beef up my portfolio. I need to sit down for a weekend and learn me some After Effects. I really need to take a solid Saturday afternoon and a solid Sunday to just learn After Effects, because I am not good there right now.
That little orange box does not see enough love.
It is scary. Trust me, I hated After Effects for the longest time.
And I've attempted before, but I just was not. I just wasn't there yet. I was trying to learn too much at one time, and so I just had to table After Effects.
Right, and I was like that a couple weeks ago, or a couple of months ago, where I'm just like, oh my god, After Effects is easy. Not easy now. I was like, all the gears have finally started turning. Like, okay, I'm not afraid of After Effects.
You were tweeting about that. I remember you were like, wait a minute, I love After Effects. I think that was one of your tweets.
Yep, and that's the beauty of Premiere, is the whole bridging and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's why I love. I mean, even like the Lightroom and Photoshop stuff, like the edit in function in Lightroom to Photoshop, it's like, I need to remove this. I need to just like take it over real fast and boop, it's gone.
Yep. And then that's
why Adobe's dope.
Yep. And then there's a couple more people that I have that I follow. It's been a while since I've seen his work. He does more on the creative live kind of thing. Chase Jarvis. I don't know if you're both or either. He runs the creative live.
I know what Creative Live is.
Yeah, he's the CEO of Creative Live. He used to do a lot of stuff with YouTube and stuff, but now he's more focused on the Creative Live stuff.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I know who this is. I've seen this guy before.
But that's just a handful.
He does stuff too?
Yeah, a little bit. He does more on the interview kind of side, like you know how like he'll interview a bunch of like different creatives and stuff. And the whole creative live thing is pretty nice too.
Yep.
The last one that I'll mention for filming, and I do like these guys. I think Ballistic just came out. Film Riot. They're really good. It's very entertaining. They're very knowledgeable. I do love their stuff. I actually will I'll tell my work like all the time, I'm like, look, these are really entertaining videos, even though they're tutorials, they're still entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, even I'm on like Creative Live's website right now, and they have like, you know, their first video is Fundamentals of Photography. So that's definitely a solid resource. Looks like they have a bunch of that kind of stuff on here.
Yep, and there's a lot of YouTubers and stuff out there that'll like it's so easy. I mean, I'll go down rabbit holes all the time. I don't know if you guys do this. I'll go down rabbit holes.
Just clicking on the right hand bar, man. It's like watching something, and you look over there right as the video ends, and you're like, oh wait a minute, I can learn that right now. And then you go click that, and all of a sudden you're like 10 videos later, and 2.5 hours later.
Mm-hmm.
Now the other thing you can do, and I think this is what I was trying to get at, is a lot of, there's still well-known photographers that need assistance. You can also go the assistant route too. You don't have to go straight into the field of being like a photographer. You could actually go be an assistant. And sometimes they will, photographers or video people, they will, on the video side, it's called a PA, personal assistant. You could learn that route too, where you could go into the assisting route. I'll give you a quick story real quick. One of my teachers, his name is Greg Heisler. He's done 78 covers with Time, and a bunch of other big magazines. His name's Greg Heisler. He actually, there was a photographer way back in the day called Arnold Newman. I don't know if you guys are familiar with him. I don't know if you've studied film, photography in the past, but Arnold Newman is a really well-known portrait photographer. He kind of changed the way portrait photography was done with like his environmental work. But what happened was Greg wanted to work with him so badly, he actually sent a letter to Arnold. Arnold said no. Greg then, he was like, oh, okay, I'll just go ahead, just go knock on his door. Literally knocked on his door, and then Greg, he still said no. And then Greg's like, okay. And then he's like, wait, I'm not getting rid of you, are you? Am I? He's like, nah. So he was like, all right, fine. Come show me what you can do. And so he actually started working like as an assistant for Arnold Newman. Of course, I am paraphrasing the story. I believe it's been so long since I've heard this story, but this is how you could go to. You could go the assistant PA route.
Yeah, that's actually, someone suggested that to me when I was looking for a job, that I should look for something like that rather than just getting a photographer spot or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I did the same thing with my wedding photography, man. You know, it's one of those situations where it kind of never hurts to ask. I had, if you don't know, wedding photography has a bunch of, like, your chance of getting hired with zero wedding photography experience is so tiny, like second shooting or anything like that is so difficult to break that market. But once you have that first one, it's a lot easier. Yeah. I messaged the photographer that I work with now mostly, Vin Nguyen, who's a very high-end wedding photographer here in the Bay Area, because he was looking for a assistant, a third shooter slash assistant, which pretty much, it was a Facebook ad, and it said I need someone that can assist, literally carry around his lighting equipment and his camera and his lenses on the day for a 12-hour wedding, and you can bring your camera if you'd like and take photos. That was literally it. The pay was like $12 an hour. So yep. I responded to it and said I would love to do it. And he literally replied with, "You don't have enough experience. I don't." And it sounds ridiculous, but that's just the wedding industry. And then I didn't get that job.
Shot weddings before.
Well, this was before I'd shot weddings.
Oh, okay.
And then not but a week later, I got a text message from him, and he said, "What are you doing tomorrow? Can you meet me at my house at 6 o'clock in the morning and drive up to San Francisco and help me with this wedding and carry my lenses around? You may bring your camera if you'd like." So I did. And I took photos, all good. Did that, like, I think two more times with him, just assisting him. And I sent him all my edited photos once I finished editing them. It took him, like, a month and a half to actually look at them. And when he saw them, he said, "All right, let's get you shooting." So he brought me on as a third shooter for weddings. And now I second shoot for him and do main shooting when he has double booked dates. It's one of those situations where it's like assisting with someone you can, I've learned so much from him because my background is event photography and weddings are events, but they're a lot different. There's a lot of portraiture in it. And I've learned so much from just being around him. And so like, don't look at those as like, you know, not as good of options as school or a job. That you can learn so much out of those in the right situation.
Yep. Very true.
So, yeah, this, of course, this debate's just like the Apple and Mac or the Apple and PC debate.
Yeah, every topic that we've had tonight, Wheels, we've never come up with a definitive answer. They're all just endless debates.
That's just what it's going to be. And a lot of this stuff, I think a lot of the topics, a lot of the topics will be endless debates.
Oof.
And so that's just what it's going to be. And so, I mean, I don't know. I've given you my advice. So is Ben. So is Eric. And it's just all at the end of the day, it's pretty much all up to you of what you want to do, because we're not running your life. Okay, you are running your life. You, like, trust me, I've had to make the hard decisions before too. Trust me, my path was not the easiest. I'll tell you this right now. I'll go on record. Even though I was telling people I was a photographer / videographer, I was still delivering pizzas after school. Like, I had to get a job, and I was making good money. Luckily, working delivery, I was able to take off, like, the weekends that I needed to travel. And that's the thing, is, like, sometimes
it doesn't make you any less of a photographer.
Exactly.
That's what you're saying at all. Like, that's the biggest point, is that if you're working and you're learning, like, that's the goal of trying to get into the industry, whether you're doing it full time or just part time.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then the other big thing too is don't be afraid to ask questions. And I know we said this last week, but again, like, I mean, I will never consider myself to be a leader in the industry until never. I never will. I don't know. But, like, feel free to reach out to me. I'll give you any advice you want. I mean, I've given several kids advice on how to get into esports and video and stuff. And, like, even though some people are like, oh, I've said this a million times, I don't want to say it again. I will say I literally have a copy and paste of what I would tell people to do.
And just, I get asked occasionally. Obviously, I'm not quite as big of a public name as you guys, but I get the same questions of how do you get into it and what do you recommend. And, well, you know, I'm sure all of us and a lot of our friends that have been on the podcast before are ready and willing to help at any time. So, you know, my DMs are always open. I'm sure a bunch of other people's are. Feel free to ask.
Yep, mine are open.
Yep,
they should be.
Yeah, mine are definitely open, and I have had questions before in the past, and I have answered them, and I probably should follow up with a couple of people that have asked me questions just to see if they were able to make it or if they were able to succeed in the industry. And I think I know one of them has, and he's doing a lot of works. I won't bring names, but he was trying to be an esports photographer. But he was really good at still life photography, like really good at it. And I told him, I was like, dude, that's something you need to do is still life. I know you want to do the portraits and stuff. You can do that on the side, but your still life's amazing.
Yeah.
But I guess what we'll do is it's been almost an hour and a half. I think we'll end it there. So yeah, if anyone has anything left to say. All right, let's do this. Anyone working on anything? Anyone working on anything exciting?
Yeah, man. I'm in Columbus right now for the second set of Call of Duty's League. Doing some work with Epsilon, and I have a bunch of stuff coming up with Deserto and some music festivals and some corporate work. And the calendar's busy for summer, so I'm really excited about that.
I'm working on a couple of video things for MetaThreads with the Level 3 backpack. And then, we've got a couple of events coming up. We'll be at Comic-Con down in San Diego. We've got Evo coming up. I do believe that we'll be there, Wheels, so we should hang out. So we've got those coming up, and then we've got the PAX events in the fall and all that. And then, yeah, other than that, I'm going to Montana this weekend for my cousin's wedding. So I'm going to take my camera and get some bangers of a bunch of nature.
Hell yeah.
It's going to be dope.
Although, dude,
it gets to 40 degrees at night in Montana in the summer.
That's a no from me.
Yeah, all right. So, like, what? Really? Anyway, I thought that was absurd. But, yeah, it's going to be dope. So I just got to remember to bring my coat.
I mean, it's the same thing in LA. It's like a desert. Like, it gets cold at night.
Bro. Not in LA. Dude, it gets down to like 60 at night. I leave the window open. It's the greatest thing ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, California's hot in the days and pretty cold at nights, actually.
It's not even hot in the day. It was like 75 today. It was perfect.
Sorry, they're perfect in the day and nice and chilly.
Yeah, it is. It's like perfect television weather in the day.
Yeah.
It is something we're working on. A lot of us were filmed here.
What am I working on? We're doing a live show every Friday and Saturday called Game Day over at Splice. I'm working on that a bunch, and I got a couple more projects coming out. Champs is right around the corner, doing a couple things for that, and then a lot of things with League, and just I don't know, just editing away. I'm just sitting there.
So, attaboy.
So yeah, and so I'm trying to think of some other projects that I'm working on that are pretty cool. We're going to drop a merch line, which is pretty tight. Or no, not drop a merch line. It's kind of weird. It's kind of weird to explain, but a lot of the photography stuff that I've done for merch is going to ready to be posted, which I'm really excited for.
Hey, that's dope. That's dope.
Nice.
Yep. But so yeah, we'll leave it with that. And if you've gotten up to this point, feel free to shoot any questions. I guess we need to start doing this where we need to involve the community a little bit more. So if you have any questions that you want to ask us that we want to give you advice on, we'll do it at the top of the show. So feel free to shoot us any questions.
Actually, you can, I guess, DM any of us, and we'll just like pass the questions on to Wheels, and we'll talk about it at the start of the show next time.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And if you made it up to this point, please DM us, because then that means you listened to the entire episode, and I love you for that.
Yeah, if you did that, you are a saint.
Yeah. All right, guys.
All right, well, we'll leave it there. And as always, I'm just going to add the outro later.